Hello, everyone. Welcome to the library. My name is Michael Rodriguez. I'm a collections librarian, and amongst other things that I do are kind of to curate these series. We have a colloquia series, a film series, and a writer series. This happens to be a colloquia series that we co-sponsor with Professor John Beck and the programming for Our Daily Work, Our Daily Lives. Carol Armstrong is here, too, and I just want to say thank you. She has an endowment for events for the library, and I hope we're doing a good job for you.
Woo!
I just want to, I'll just introduce John for a second, but I just point out that all these events, the colloquia series events and the reader and the writer series events, are all recorded and given catalog records, and then you can listen streaming from the catalog. So, for instance, after this is put in the catalog, you can look up the artist's name, or probably each one of their names, or Lomax, or whatever, or just look up the colloquia series as a series, and you can stream. So, you didn't hear to come hear me. Please welcome John, Professor John Beck, who's going to have a few words to introduce.
Well, it's good to see you here, and hopefully other people will still come through the door. I'm going to start sign-in sheets in a second on each side of the room. So please do sign in. We love to know who's here, and it's always worthwhile. We have two more brown bags in. For those of you, there's a number of newcomers in the room, so let me just say that Our Daily Work, Our Daily Lives is a joint program between the Labor Education Program of the School of Human Resources and Labor Relations and the Traditional Arts Division of the MSU Museum. And we've been in business for the most part 25 years, but this brown bag series, we're in the 22nd year of the brown bag series, or 21st year, how time flies when you're having fun. We have two more coming in April. Patrick Dixon will be here, and I'll pass these out as well. Patrick Dixon will be here on April 6th to talk about poultry workers, specifically in a program entitled Negotiating Taste, Consumers and Workers in the Changing Poultry Industry, 1970 to 1990. And fabulous scholar who I worked with at the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. Then Scott Peters will be here on Friday, April 21st. By the way, here, both of these will be over at the MSU Museum, over there in the MSU Museum Auditorium. Scott Peters works at the Michigan History Museum, recently published a book called Making Waves, Michigan's Boat Building Industry, 1865 to 2000. Scott's a wonderful, wonderful guy, great speaker, and he'll be talking about the sound of caulking irons to the smell of fiberglass working in Michigan's boatyards, 1870 to 2000. So I really commend those two to you. I'm also going to announce that today we have the head of the Cambodian Alliance of Trade Unions, and her name is Supan Yang, and she's going to be speaking over at South Kedzie at 4 o'clock on Hidden in the Sweatshops, the Human Cost of Nike Athletic Gear. So if you're interested, do come over to South Kedzie, but I will start these over here and make sure those make it around the room. Today, we are very, very lucky. We are lucky because of the fact that Jamie Stone, who my friend Sally Potter likes to say is one of the finest banjo players available in the world, Jamie Stone has been working for some time using the kind of overall song collection of Alan Lomax to create something that he called the Jamie Stone Lomax Project, which, working with a number of other talented musicians, kind of both playing and reinterpreting those pieces of music that Lomax collected, much of it here in Michigan and in the greater Great Lakes, working with sailors, with lumberjacks, with people across the United States. Lomax was really one of the, probably the single most important foundational ethnomusicologist and folklorist that has ever really collected here in the United States. So Jamie is going to introduce the rest of the folks who are here playing with him today. And we've entitled this presentation, Work Songs from the Woods and the Waters, The Extraordinary Music of Everyday Folks. So if you would please welcome Jamie Stone and the rest of his colleagues from the Jamie Stone Lomax Project.
Good morning, or afternoon, I suppose.
Just barely.
So in 1901, there was a fellow named Tommy Jarrell who was born in a little town called Toast, North Carolina, right next to a mountain with a big round peak. And later, this particular strain of old-time music was referred to as the round peak style. They never really knew what that was. It was mostly Northerners coming down, knocking on his door, trying to learn about these Southern Appalachian traditions. Tommy spent his life, during the daytime at least, working for the North Carolina Road Commission. He worked grading roads and in construction on the side. But what he really liked to do is get home in the evening and roll up his sleeves and play fiddle music and sing old ballads. He had a great way of playing the banjo and the fiddle and of holding court more than anything. He didn't have a telephone, he said there was no point in having a telephone because everybody knew they were already invited. So they ought to just come over, as many did all through the 60s and 70s as he got older. And Alan Lomax went to visit in 1983 after a big festival in the area and filmed him. There's really great footage on the Alan Lomax Archive YouTube channel, which is where we learned this song. It's kind of, I guess it's like an after work song. There's a great story that Tommy tells in a film they made about him where one of the kind of work song that they used to do was like when they'd sing songs do like community work, corn shuckings, what they also sometimes called husking bees. It's where the term spelling bee comes from. It's just like a party. Husking bee is where they'd husk corn and then have a square dance. And the square dance was the reward for doing all of your manual labor. He said, when they were younger, they would have these bean stringing parties, and when whoever owned the farm would leave the room, they would start throwing bushels of green beans out the window so that they'd come back and go like, oh look, it's time for the square dance. So now I can proudly say, oh look, it's time for the square dance. This is Susan Anigal. Thank you.
Western country now, Susan and a gal. I'm going to the Western country now, Susan and a gal. I'm going to the Western country now, Susan and a gal.
I'd like to introduce you to our next special guest, Captain Richard Maitland. He was a retired sea captain who lived on Snug Harbor on Staten Island in New York. Alan Lomax went to go visit him to collect his songs, sea shanties mostly, which were, you know, one of the main work songs in the late 1800s and early 1900s. You really have to kind of picture the enormous amount of work it took to run a ship, even just to rig, you know, a 75-foot boat, you know, was a big job of a lot of people. And they actually used work songs literally to stay together, you know, hauling sails all at the same time, and they would do it through the rhythm of the songs. It was also a great kind of expressive tool during all this hard work to, you know, sometimes make up verses and this kind of thing. We're going to play a song, but first I'm going to introduce you to our source for it, Richard Maitland, who kind of barked it into Alan Lomax's microphone in 1939. It's kind of a curious song because, our version is quite lush and dreamy, a lot of people don't think of it as a work song because it's been kind of recast as a lullaby. It's the state song of Virginia, but Shenandoah was originally came from French Canadian voyageurs eventually became a really popular song. You can hear in the structure of the lyrics this sort of possibility for call and response, even though it's no longer sung that way. So I'm going to play you a little bit of his mysterious explanation of the song, a little of him singing.
Shenandoah, he's an Indian chief, but what that's got to do with the sea, I don't know. But somehow or another, it got into the sailor's idea that it is a very good shanty, and they sang it. Now, in my opinion, Shenandoah was first sung by the logging men coming in from the woods in the spring of the year, and generally that's where the shanty first began. The best singer in the bunch, he'd get up in front on the way to town, all of them walking in, they never rode in or anything else. The best man singing would get up in front and he would sing the solo and all the rest would join the chorus. Now this Shenandoah, it's only a short one, but I'll do the best I can with it.
How is it used? Huh? How is it sung?
I'm going to now.
That's my favorite part. He says, how was it sung? He said, I know, I'm going to now. Just hold on.
Shenandoah, I long to win you.
Thank you.
Welcome from Vermont, Maura Smiley. We're going to do a song now that is perhaps the oldest song we will do today. It was originally a minstrel song, and if you aren't familiar, minstrelsy was the most popular form of entertainment, and disguised racism in America, and it was quite a dark chapter, and not a small one. It lasted for a long time. It was America's primary cultural export around the world, and the music featured the banjo, which was essentially stolen from African Americans, who were essentially stolen from West Africa. Some curious white folks started borrowing elements of their music and instruments and playing style, and then during the minstrel era proceeded to you know, don burnt cork and in blackface present kind of racial stereotypes and essentially exploiting their music while lampooning ideas they had about them. And it's very easy to kind of throw all of that music under the rug because you are, I think, required to talk about where it comes from. But there is also some amazing music. You know, one of the interesting things that happens with folk songs is they sort of can lie fallow for a while and then spring up again in some brand new form. And this experience that people refer to as the folk process, which is basically like, do you guys remember Broken Telephone from kindergarten? And that's basically what folk music is. So somebody, you know, somebody blows through town and you hear a snatch of a melody and maybe catch a verse. And if you don't understand all the verses or you don't remember them, you make some up. Or maybe you don't like the lyrics and so you turn it into an instrumental song, which is very common. A lot of the fiddle tunes originally had words. And so we're going to play one of those now. This is called The Boatsman, or De Boatman Dance, as they used to call it back in the day. And in fact, this is a piece that Aaron Copland arranged for orchestra and a series of folk song arrangements. And somehow it wound up in North Carolina, completely stripped of its lyrics and minstrel past. And it became what's known as a crooked tune, a tune that has irregular phrases. Usually, that's an indication that it wasn't a square dance tune. It was a song that somebody played all by their lonesome and could kind of play out however they felt it. And so this is our kind of newfangled arrangement of the Boatman Dance. This is Sumaya Jackson tuning the fiddle. Thank you.
So can everybody, since we're talking about songs that involve working in the body, I wondered if I could get everybody to stand and do something with me. Just stand and let's just picture ourselves doing something repetitive, so making a rhythm with our bodies just by stepping. So we just step forward and back and forward and back, or just side to side, you know. So you're just feeling that rhythm. And say I'm the leader, I'm at the head, or maybe I have the loudest voice. That's probably who gets to do the calls. And then you get to do the responses. So if I was to call somebody something and you just call that same thing back to me, let's try a couple of those. That's maybe the easiest. So just go, hey, na, 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 oh. Hey, na, 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 oh. Working's hard, but someone's gotta do it.
Working's hard, but someone's gotta do it.
Hey, oh, hey. You've got the spirit now. So now we're going to do something that's actually a spiritual song, but it's got that same calm response rhythm. And this entrains us. This pulls us together as individuals into one unit. So this is a song called Sheep, Sheep, Don't You Know the Road? And you get to do the response, which is, yes.
I know the road.
And then I'll call something else, and then you go.
Lord, I know the road.
So the first one is yes.
Lord, I know the road.
Oh, sheep, sheep, don't you know the road?
Yes, Lord, I know the road.
And don't you know the road by the singing of the song?
Yes, Lord, I know the road.
And don't you know the road by the singing of the song?
Yes, Lord, I know the road.
And young sheep, don't you know the road?
Yes. Lord, I know the road.
And old sheep, don't you know the road?
Yes, Lord, I know the road.
And don't you know the road by the clapping of the hands?
Yes, Lord, I know the road.
And don't you know the road by the clapping of the hands?
Yes, Lord.
Yes, Lord, I know the road.
Yes, my Lord, I do know the road.
Yes, Lord, I you're welcome to, but we also, but you can also sit down. We're going to do a song that really originated in a field, a hot field of work, of agricultural work. And the great songwriter Leadbelly, songwriter and singer and player of instruments, wrote a song called Bring Me a Little Water, Sylvie, after hearing his uncle call to his aunt, whose name was Sylvie, bring me a little water, Sylvie. And he had this musical ear that could turn that into a song. And then that song's continued to have the folk process. And the way that I learned it was from Sweet Honey in the Rock, the great octet, female African-American octet from DC. And then found that this body percussion went really well. So the continuation of the folk process happens to this song as well as all the others. So here's Leadbelly's. Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Mm-hmm.
So in 1949, a folklorist by the name of Herbert Halpert set out from Washington, D.C. in a converted army ambulance. He was one of Alan Lomax's colleagues, and he went to do a field expedition through 7 southern states collecting songs for the Works Progress Administration. Collected a great many. But amongst my favorites were from his trip to Bahalia, Mississippi, where he met the family of a pastor, and the whole family had sing, 4 kids and all, and the two
younger daughters actually did a lot of the arranging. They sort of learned, what was the phrase that they used in these interviews? They said, well, we learned to tune it from our mama. That meant she kind of arranged the parts, but then they would fashion it according to their liking. And they talk about learning this next song from a radio broadcast. They had heard this song. It had been recorded probably the year before in South Carolina. They said they liked the tune, but they didn't really like the harmonies, so they kind of rewrote them, etc. But they only sang one verse on this recording before. You kind of hear the tape end. And it started to skips its way. And so we went back and traced to find the recording they likely learned it from and gathered back a few extra verses. But this is a new song that's on a brand new record called Jamie Stone's Folk Life that comes out in a couple weeks. We have for sale back there along with Maura's beautiful record. This is called Wait on the Rising Sun.
I'm living down here.
Down here on
barren land, Lord, I'm living down here.
Down here on
barren land, Lord, I'm living down here.
Down here on
barren land, I'm going to wait,
my Lord.
I'm going to wait on that rising. Oh, Lord, that rising. Wait on the rising sun.
Oh, wait on the rising sun. Wait on the rising sun. Wait on the rising sun.
Oh, I'm living down here.
Down here on
barren land, Lord, I'm living down here.
Down here on
barren land, Lord, I'm living down here.
Down here on
barren land, I'm going to wait.
I'm
going to wait on that rising. Oh, Lord, that rising.
Wait on the rising sun. 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 Wait on the rising sun.
When I get to heaven, no, I'll join that ring.
My leader.
No, I will be happy.
My savior.
When I'm free to
exalted.
Oh, hallelujah. I have to pray. I'll sit down in the circle of joy today.
Wait on the rising sun. 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 Can you sing it?
Standing down here.
Down here on
barren land, Lord, I'm standing down here.
Down here on
barren land, Lord, I'm standing down here.
Down here on
barren land, I'm going to wait.
Wait, my Lord.
I'm going to wait on that rising. Oh, Lord, that rising.
Wait on the rising sun. Wait on the rising sun.
Wait on the rising sun.
Wait on the rising sun. Wait on the rising sun. Oh, when I get to heaven,
wait on
join
the
that
sun.
Ring. You know I'll be happy when I'm
wait
free.
On the sun.
Oh, hell, hallelujah.
Wait
I have to pray. I'll sit down in the circle
sun.
Of
wait
joy
on the
today.
Sun.
Oh, wait on the rising sun. Oh, wait on the rising sun. Oh, wait on the rising sun. I'm going to wait on the rising sun.
Can you sing it?
Wait
praying
on the rising
down,
sun.
Here.
Down here on
barren land, Lord, I'm praying down,
down
here.
Down here on
barren land,
Lord, I'm praying down,
down
here.
Down here
on barren
land.
Wait on the rising sun. Wait on the rising sun. Wait on the rising sun. I'm going to wait on the rising sun. 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 Wait on the rising sun.
I thought maybe we could take a few minutes for questions, seeing as we are in a university. People walk around with questions at universities, right?
Grab a microphone and make sure that they get Good afternoon. It's been wonderful to hear you sing. My question is about the Lomax project in particular, and I should probably do full disclosure here, as we had a project celebrating the 75th anniversary of Alan Lomax's trip through Michigan in 1938, and I was the local coordinator of that project. And so my question is about your selection of repertoire from Lomax, which is vast, but I don't know if you've included anything of his Upper Midwest material. If not, I would encourage you to do so, but I'm just wondering what are your criteria with this project for what you decide to perform?
Yes, well, there are well over 35,000 recordings in the Lomax archive, I think probably considerably more. And we narrowed it down to probably 1,000 songs were ones that really caught my ear at some point, and kind of had to whittle it down. It very easily, the first Lomax project record very easily could have been, you know, I wanted to make a 4-CD box set, but my record label wouldn't let me. And the criteria really was different in every case, which I think is part of why the material is so wide-ranging that we do. First of all, it's collaborative. So I probably brought the lion's share, but everybody brought different things. On the first record, Margaret Glaspie is a great songwriter, and she did a lot of the singing, and she really went for lyrics. You know, so for her, it was the timeless tales, you know, what is the soul of man and goodbye old paint, stuff with rich imagery and sentiment. And so that was very much like her guiding force. For me, I was really interested, and still am, in sort of things that woke up my ear in some way, traditions, sounds, and styles that sound very singular. For instance, we recorded a song called Timothy, T-I-M-O-T-H-Y, and it's a shanty that we found from a recording in the Bahamas, but it's very clearly an old English shanty. And so it's very curious, because it sounds like a kind of, silly Cockney folk song sung, you know, in this thick, West African, Caribbean accent, and it's a very peculiar mix of traditions. And as soon as I heard it, I just thought, oh my God, we have to do that. That's the weirdest song I've ever heard, you know. In many cases, there were I made a record a number of years ago called Africa to Appalachia, and have been really interested in the banjo's African roots, and have spent some time in Mali, West Africa, and. So I love the Caribbean and the Southern American music that retains a lot of Africanisms. You hear, clapping and singing, call and response, kind of polyrhythmic elements, because I can immediately hear the connection and think like, oh, wow, that's great. We could, for instance, we'll maybe finish up here with a song in a bit called I Want to Hear Somebody Pray. That came from the Caribbean, but you could hear the West Africanisms in it very much. And so I wrote a part for prepared banjo that sounds a lot like Ngoni music from Mali. And it was like, you know, so using both like historical knowledge of the music in these traditions, but very much a wide open creative process that allows us to sort of tap into our imagination and collaborative sensibility to create something that feels like interesting musically now, because, you know, the preservation work has been done. We can all go listen to these recordings, and they're extraordinary on their own. And so it feels like if we're going to play them, we need to do something that speaks to us and contemporary audiences. And I will get to the Michigan stuff eventually.
It's not digitized in online.
Yeah.
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 Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
How do you go? You just dial Lomax, Michigan?
If you do Library of Congress, Lomax is the Alan Lomax recordings from Michigan and Wisconsin.
Alan Lomax recordings from Michigan and Wisconsin. They're at the Library of Congress.
Joe and I have listened to all of them.
Yeah. Oh, good for you.
I have a particular interest in the French Canadian stuff from there, but I don't have anything polished enough to present to an audience. But I listened to all of it.
How many states did Lomax actually hit, as it were?
That is a good question. I do not know the number off the top of my head. I'm going to say all of the southern states. He didn't record in the West at all. No Colorado, California, Nevada, Oregon, Washington. He actually only recorded a little bit up here. It was one field trip, and he covered a good amount of ground. In fact, I have a great photograph. I think it's on my website. There's a photo section that has some archival photos from the project where I found his like vehicle log where he would send back to the Library of Congress to get mileage all through northern Michigan and Wisconsin. It's really amazing to see and look at the dates and realize like how much ground they were covering in a short time. It was incredible. Yeah,
I was surprised at the songs that you have done were so focused on religion. I thought, I guess in my own stereotype or whatever, I thought that the work songs were had more emphasis on the actual labor that was being done. And so I was surprised that there was so much religion in the work songs.
Well, we're playing a lot of the repertoire that we're playing these days, even though that this talk is very much on work songs, but there are a ton of work songs where it's directly in reference to the work that they're doing. More of them. This is perhaps less representative of the full scope, and I can play you some field recordings.
Well, let me just quickly comment, though, that spirituals obviously formed a very, very important part of work relations in relation to the fact that there were a lot of things that you couldn't talk about. Religion was one of the things that you could. It bound people together. So I think that the spiritual songbook very much is part of work. And as you pointed out, a lot of them are extremely rhythmic in terms of your ability to actually get in a work rhythm to go down the fields or whatever as the case may be.
We were making links rather than doing direct work songs mostly in this, except for a couple of the shanties. So, yeah. So you're thinking that there are more work related subjects, is correct.
Here's a song that comes from a recording of in the Bahamas in 1935 that John and Alan Lomax did. It's called Bowline, and it's another kind of shanty. So they're referring to the bowline on the ship, and they're also very repetitive you know, because I imagine when you're actually doing work and singing these, they could go on for a very long time. In fact, we played a concert on Sylvester Manor, a farm. It's a woofing farm, Willing Workers on Organic Farms, a great organization. And the fellow who led the farm group and who owned the farm had collected work songs. And part of the deal of being a farmhand was singing. And they would sing as they picked and planted and cooked and broke bread. And we got to hang with them. And they had a million amazing songs. I'll play you one more fun one. This one comes from Bessie Jones on the Georgia Sea Islands. And it's another kind of work song. This one is called Regular, Regular Rollin' Under. Apparently it's in reference to like when someone would say like, how you doing? You'd say like, oh, regular, regular rollin' under. Like, you know, life's sort of rolling on top of me, but that's just kind of how it always is. That was their saying over there. That's a song about drinking water out of a gourd. you could make a song about anything.
That's true.
That also features the fife and drum, which was an early African-American pair of instruments that has fallen largely out of fashion. Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Oh, I'm coming your way. See, this is an exercise program for
Thank you so much. I'm wondering, speaking of instrumentation, what governs your encounter with the songs that you're picking up and responding to? Because that really changes it. I mean, going, at least in my mind, going from the recordings to some of your very artistic responses, is there a pattern to how you do that? Or?
Well, certainly there becomes a pattern between four people. You start to find what those comfortable spots are together. And definitely Jamie, because he's leading and has a nice way of leading, you know, will go in probably a direction that we now recognize. And I would say, I just wanted to say that for me, this project is wonderful because I've done academic music all of my life, both early music, so artistic, you know, art music from Europe, and folk music. And what this project does that some of that music doesn't, or that those projects don't try to do, is that it really does emphasize how you're emotionally responding as a musician to the material. Material that is by itself perfect and doesn't need your fixing, doesn't need anything.
Doesn't need your tuning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that for me is what governs this project.
Yeah, and you also, for me, like, one of the things I've noticed now that I've been playing music for 22 years is, you know, nothing really goes away in terms of influences. And so you go through these phases where you might be, you know, Maura made a beautiful record of Bartok's music for voices, you know? And Joe is classically trained and plays with orchestras, and you know, and all of that comes through
in his playing. And as I mentioned, I've been really interested in West African music, and I'm, you know, have sort of mildly dabbled in studying North Indian classical music for a long time. And so all of those things, sometimes it just could be a little rhythmic idea that you apply, you know, to a Southern gospel song, you know, but there's echoes of all of these things. And so, you know, a lot of what we do as musicians is we kind of just like curate our little musical world, and bring in all these different influences, and, you know, and not so much the kind of, there's a veneer of style, you know, where, you know, we can play stuff that sounds like gypsy jazz or sounds like Peruvian music, and you can do the kind of obvious things and make something that sounds like that, but I feel like if you dig deeper, there are structural elements and approaches to improvisation that really inform styles in a more significant way, and that's the stuff that we're after. And sometimes quoting on in a big way, and sometimes in a very subtle way, you know, like, you know, the way Joe plays on Shenandoah, it feels like he's quoting, you know, symphonies, you know, and so, and it's hard, you know, so I think working with the right people is everything, you know, because they bring whole worlds in a lifetime of music. To every single thing that sometimes is not really spoken of. It's not intentional.
Well, I am going to bet my bottom dollar that people would love to hear some more music before we close it down in a few minutes, if that's possible. Oh, one comment from Lori.
I just have to say I got tickled at your instrumentation, in large part because, as you may well know, Alan Lomax was notoriously accordion phobic, and he did record a few accordions in spite of himself here in Michigan, but it's kind of great to see you not do that here in playing his music.
Yeah.
I will say that it is quite possible that Alan Lomax would have hated what we're doing. You know, there's a really amazing piece that he wrote, and he says something about how, like, just because, you know, you can play your instruments well and sing everything in tune doesn't mean you've made an improvement on the music. And I read that and I thought, hot damn. So in honor of the accordion and the banjo, mostly, I haven't cared about original instrumentation, and a lot of the songs that we do started their life a cappella, and so, you know, we've completely invented the bringing of instruments to them. But in this case, I went hunting in the digital archive for a song that featured originally both banjo and accordion, we'll do that. We'll send it out to Alan Lomax, wherever he is, like it or not. And thank you. This is actually a dance song that's about not dancing. So you can dance or not dance. And it comes from the island of Dominica. And it's called Buen Pas Danser. Thank you.
We want to thank John Beck for having us. Thank you guys for coming. We have a mailing list you can sign, and we'll be selling CDs and hanging out for a little bit. Spread the word. Bye for now.
Au revoir, je vous invite dans ça.